Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability with acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love. Tonight, Josephine will be sharing how we can unify the three aspects of our mind and why that's so important.
Hello, everyone. Tony and I would like to welcome our listeners from Australia and Asia and Europe and South, Central, and North America. It's just such a delight to know, to have you join us. We really, really appreciate it. And I invite all of you to ask any questions here on the show or at my webpage anytime about any subject we cover in this international community of ours. I would really love to hear from you. And we'd love to exchange ideas and knowledge with you. So please write me about your psychic experiences or your questions that you've always wanted to ask a clairvoyant about being psychic. And if I can, I'll be very happy to answer them to the best of my ability. And tonight we've got a lot of information for you and a lot of wisdom. And I just want to remind you that you can always listen to it again. So sit back and relax and just let this information flow over you like warm sunshine opening up a flower. And also this evening, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Huna tradition as described in Serge Kahuli King's book, Mastering Your Hidden Self, A Guide to the Huna Way. It's a wonderful book, and I highly recommend it to anybody. I've gotten so much from his work. And, you know, so many people are not even aware of Huna. This is a really beautiful spiritual tradition, and one that's very, very close to my heart because it embraces all of our natural human potential, including our psychic ability. And it also acknowledges our ability to join together with nature in ways that our Western minds wouldn't even think possible. You know, things such as changing the weather or finding our way to distant places or connecting with herds of animals or with individuals. Few people realize this, but we can. When we are centered and balanced in spiritual principles, we humans can do these things. We can call the rain. You know, we can clear the skies. And, of course, this is not the exclusive wisdom of the kahunas. Indigenous cultures all the world round have understood the significance of our interconnectedness with nature. And it's also a basic human right of ours, since we are nature. And I first learned about our ability to directly affect the weather from Vicki Noble in her book Shakti Woman, which is another wonderful book that I highly recommend. And if I'm not mistaken, I also believe that Shirley MacLaine, the American actress, spoke of it, of having that experience when she was in South America with some of her friends there. And our main topic tonight is that we are so much more than what our contemporary mindset currently holds us to. But before we go any further into this, I always like to begin our shows with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift to me from our friend and mentor, Jana Massey, and she shared it freely with all of us and encouraged us to use it in our relationships and our lives. So if you will, please join me in this little agreement right now. And it goes like this. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you all for joining in with that.
Josephine, before you go on, we've got a lovely message from a California couple about last week's show, and they write, love you guys. The show was wonderful.
Thank you so much, Tony. That's so nice to hear. And it's so nice to know that, you know, the two of you are enjoying the show together. That's really wonderful. So in recent years, I've attended our local Bioneers conference here in San Luis Obispo. The Bioneers meet in San Francisco Bay Area every fall in October, And they offer these amazing inspirational speakers who cover breakthrough solutions for people and the planet with regard to environmental and social changes that are happening around the world. And one of their speakers from 2010, I think it was, Elizabeth Lindsay, left a really lasting impression on me. So what Elizabeth is doing in her work is she's trying to map the human cultural experience. She's trying to safeguard humanity's DNA. She says that, and I think this is so poignant, she says that our elders are libraries of Alexandria, having each tell their own story. The cultural loss of each death, she says, is huge. And, you know, I really feel that much of what she has to say has about the abilities of our elders in other cultures has been confirmed in my own experience. And I was wondering, Tony, if you could show that next slide then, please.
Certainly.
So Elizabeth says, "May we always trust our ability to close our eyes and see more clearly." Isn't that beautiful?
Very nice.
I just love that one. And, you know, it reminds me of an exercise that I've done in a previous show, but it's a really good exercise, so I'd like to lead us all in this exercise again. And so if you'd like, go ahead and close your eyes. And, of course, you don't want to do this exercise if you're operating any machinery like driving a car. You can just save it for later. And pretend for just a moment with me, if you will, that you're in a cave, a very dark cave. Listen to what's around you. See if you can feel what is touching your skin. See if you can smell anything in your immediate surrounding. Perhaps you have a taste lingering in your awareness inside your mouth. And then go ahead and just begin to return to your normal waking consciousness. Open your eyes and stretch your body and move a little bit. So Elizabeth says, Elizabeth Lindsay, and I fully agree with her, that we awaken our senses in the darkness. And I really like to go outside at night and just see what I can see and feel and hear. It's a lovely thing for us to do, to embrace the darkness. It's very quiet, but there's often a lot of little animals that are busy out there at night. It's a wonderful way for us to spend a little time. And the way that I tend to put this when I'm teaching is that when we allow ourselves to step into our finest, most subtle level of awareness, as we do when we're in the dark, we open ourselves up to a deeper experience of our sensual perception. We just take a little step closer towards a different sensual experience. It's a little finer, a little more subtle, and this more subtle sensing is just a hair's breadth away from our extrasensory perceptions. And it opens the door for us to access our psychic ability. So in her talk at the 2010 Bioneers Conference, Elizabeth Lindsay spoke of the Polynesian wayfinders. And people in this tradition were extraordinary navigators. They were able to accurately predict the next 4 days' weather by the first dawn light and the tiniest whispers of the wind. He would stand in the dark, you know, for hours before the daylight and just feel and listen and perceive. And then as the dawn would come, they'd look for the tiniest bit of color under the cloud, under a cloud. And, of course, you know, most of our ancient navigators from around the world received visions of far-off lands, and then they sought them successfully by listening to these subtle nuances of weather and by trusting their inner sense of knowing. So close your eyes again, if you will, and just imagine with me those rafts that they built, perhaps from floating reeds or from logs tied together, the lashes binding everything. Maybe there's bundles of provisions. And then those long, long journeys taking weeks and months, covering thousands of miles. Elizabeth said that in the storms, they would loosen the lashings of their rafts to let the waves move through them. And then they tied themselves to the boat. This says to me that they knew that energy needs to move, and they let it move through them, through their boats and through their very selves. And that's how they found their way to new lands, lands that they knew were there, thousands of miles away. I mention this because navigators were so connected in all aspects of themselves, and they trusted so completely in their own inner guidance that they knew and actually found their way.
Well, Josephine, that's a really remarkable, and it's reminding me of a book that I read a couple of years ago by Charles Hapgood called Maps of the Ancient Sea Kings. And it's an extraordinary book because it contains many ancient maps which were drawn from even older maps. And these maps suggest that people on canoes, because it was the only technology for travel at the time, must have traveled vast distances around the world. And when I was researching for my own book on sacred sites, I discovered that a number of indigenous cultures actually found their new home by going on long journeys in canoes. For example, it's believed that the native Mississippian people, who speak Muscogean, if I've got that correct, they built a great earth lodge in Georgia known as the Okmulgee National Monument. And it's thought that they originally came a very long distance, probably from Mexico, because that's the only place where they found very similar shaped mounds. And interesting, the word Okmulgee in Muscogean means where they sat down.
Oh, that's great.
And there was another sacred site. This is the Peterborough petroglyphs, which are in Ontario. And the images there imply that they were constructed by people from Russia and or Scandinavia, thousands of miles away, and they're thousands of years old. And
wow.
The only way, really, that people could have traveled back then seems to be, you know, on these long, long canoe journeys.
Wow, isn't that great? What was the name of that book again that you read?
Maps of the Ancient Sea Kings by Charles Hapgood. Albert Einstein wrote the foreword to one of his other books. So he was a very well thought of historian. I think he's passed now.
Wow. Do you have that book back in England?
I do, yes.
Oh, that's great. I'd love to see your library there.
It didn't
someday.
Make the journey over. There's only so many books you can
bring.
Carry. Yeah.
And speaking of books, you know, those of you who may already know, but Tony has a wonderful book himself that he's written that is a total favorite coffee table book in our house. I can't tell you, everybody who walks in the door wants to pick it up and read it. It's called The Sacred Sites Bible, and I think copies are still available on the Barnes & Noble site on the Internet. I highly recommend it. You know, in our Western bias, we so often think that Columbus was the great explorer. But there is, like you say, a much earlier record of these phenomenal navigators that goes untold.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can show that next slide then. We've showed this slide before, but I love it. I think it's such a good one. It says, until the lioness tells her own story, the tale of the hunt glorifies the hunter. That's an African proverb. It's a good one, isn't it?
That's very good, yes.
So history, of course, is always told by the victor, and this leaves so much precious wisdom left unshared. And Elizabeth Lindsay said that her Hawaiian aunties, who helped to raise her, would chant at the shoreline for the fish to come to them. Isn't that great?
Yes, that is, isn't it? So much lost, yeah, and destroyed as well.
Yeah. And she said that as a little girl, you know, she didn't realize that this rare, wonderful wisdom was becoming, you know, scarce in the world, in the modern world. And these women spoke intimately with the elements because they knew and understood that everything is sacred. And she said that, you know, our modern culture would totally just overlook them because they were poor and they didn't look very interesting to somebody from the outside. And I also have a Peruvian friend whose mentor and teacher, Dari Kikin, did a really similar thing with the fish in the stream that was near his village home. You know, in our modern world, we just don't hear about events like this. As Elizabeth Lindsay points out, the elders who do know these skills are rapidly slipping away. But I think, fear not, None of this is totally lost to us forever. I think we can still access it if we go within and search. And many ancient cultures believe, and I do as well, that there's always an ancestor standing next to you. We can tune in and use our ability to access all that has come before by using our sincerity and our intentions to do so. Elizabeth said a great thing. She said, put your forehead to theirs and breathe in their knowing and give them your gratitude and humility. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that's really beautiful, Josephine.
It just gives me the goosebumps.
And it makes me think of my friend Sonu, who edited Carl Jung's Red Book. He recently gave a lecture on Jung's Theology of the Dead at the Pacifica Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara. So we had a chance to meet up. Normally, 5,000 miles away. Anyway, he told me that in the Red Book, Jung puts forward the view that we are here to serve the dead.
Oh.
And they need us to learn the lessons that they failed to absorb during their own lives.
And yeah, you know, I think we do really stand in a long line of human development and evolution. And that includes lessons not yet learned from the past and lessons that we're here to learn today. And those that still lie ahead of us as well. And I'm sure that all of our technological advances are a part of this, you know. Like, for instance, as to navigation, we use GPS, you know, global positioning system, instead of the stars now.
Yeah, we do, although I haven't really converted to the GPS yet.
Neither have I must admit. I still use the old map.
But in a similar way, we get our weather now from the news. I know I do that, or I look it up on the internet.
I do too.
And it's reminding me that in Alexander's first book, F.M. Alexander, who founded the Alexander Technique, he talks about a boatman that he calls Old Soul, probably Solomon, that he used to help ferrying him across the Thames. There can't have been many bridges back in 1910. And he would often ask him in the morning what the weather would be doing for the day, and this old guy would stare at the distant horizon and look around the sky. And then he'd come back with his prediction for the day, and according to Alexander, it was very, very accurate.
Isn't that great? He probably could even tell for a few days looking around like these old guys that we were just talking about.
Yeah, and
old men and women.
And we tend not to do that so much now.
Yeah, no, we really don't. Well, let's go ahead and show our next slide then, if you would, Tony. This is another one from Elizabeth, and it fits right in with what we've just said. She says, we are bloated with information and starved for wisdom. Isn't that great?
Yeah, but sad too, isn't it?
Sad too, yep. So although most of our ancient skills have been lost to us in a way, and our senses have become you know, dull to these subtle messages of the natural world, I feel very strongly that we can still regain them if we have a calling to do so and really devote ourselves to the task. So, for instance, I have a couple of friends who've become passionate about dowsing, the art of finding water using a forked stick. And this was a skill that my grandfather on my mother's side was known for. He was great at finding water underground. And that is a very, very practical ability for somebody who makes their life, their living through farming, as did all of his neighbors. So he was in pretty high demand. And so my friend, who took up an interest in dowsing, he shared with me that his first experience with dowsing happened at about the age of 13. He said that his father was planning to repair a water pipe in the front yard, and they needed to find where it ran underground, and they knew where, you know, one of the main was, and they knew where it came into the house, but where he needed to repair it, they just didn't know exactly where it was. And so his dad bent a couple of coat hangers into L shapes, and then he held them, with the short ends of those L-shaped wires so that the long ends pointed directly in front of him at about shoulder width apart. And then he walked slowly across the yard until the two rods moved and turned inward and crossed. And my friend told me that they crossed directly over the water pipe, which they then successfully dug up and repaired. And then years later, when my friend was an adult, he needed to find a water pipe that went into his house. So he remembered having seen his dad use those coat hangers, and he tried the same thing. And the water pipe was right where his coat hangers crossed. And he told me that what he likes so much about dowsing is the connection to spirit. He said, by dowsing, we can ask for answers from our subconscious. And the subconscious is in contact with all of the knowledge of the universe. It is our connection to our higher selves, our souls. And I really feel that that is true, that we can access all of this information, even though it feels like it's lost, which is kind of in a way, you know, might help us to realize how precious it is and to seek it out. Because, you know, there's so much change that's taken place in our modern times, and many of these ancient skills are rapidly disappearing. But I really feel that we can still claim our own personal power and step into the truth of who we are. We just need, you know, to head in that direction. Maybe you can show our next slide then, Tony.
Certainly.
This one is a quote from Joseph Campbell. I love this quote. He says, "If you take one step toward the gods, they will then take 10 steps closer to meet you." Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's really inspiring, isn't it? It just takes one step.
Yep. You just head in that direction and all of this help from spirit comes to you.
Mm-hmm.
So according to Serge Kahuli King, who's a wonderful mentor for me, I got his book, Mastering Your Hidden Self, A Guide to the Huna Way, years ago, and I really have loved it, and I highly recommend it to anyone. And he said that what the Kahunas did, you know, they were the spiritual elders of the Huna tradition, the Polynesian tradition of Hawaii, and of much of the rest of Polynesia. He said that what the Kahunas did to claim their personal power was to unify the subconscious mind with the conscious mind and the superconscious mind. And when we unify our minds in this way, we become more of who we truly are. This is why I'm so passionate about teaching people how to develop their psychic ability, because when we do open ourselves to this natural human ability, which we all have, we move closer to that unification within ourselves.
That's fantastic, yeah. And anyway, Josephine, we do have a question from William in Santa Maria, and he asks, "Can you give examples of anybody living today that have these powers to control the weather and things?"
Oh, thank you, William. That's a lovely question. And yes, you know, as I mentioned right at the start, Vicki Noble in her book Shakti Woman describes an experience that she had doing that. And that was what sort of inspired me to begin to experiment with it myself. And then many of you have heard of Greg Braden. And he tells of his First Nations friend who took him for a long walk out into the desert to do a rain dance, as he called it. And they just stood for a few moments. His friend went into this circle of sacred stones and just imagined the rain coming. And then he said, "Okay, we're done." And they left. And Greg said, "Well, wait a minute, what happened?" And he said, "Oh, I just felt the rain and imagined it and knew it was coming." And, you know, that is something that we can do, and especially here in our droughted California climate, you know, not a bad idea to see if we can't exercise a little bit of our ancient wisdom here and turn in that direction a little bit and try to call a little rain to us. I've got a dear friend who years ago in the California drought that we had about 8 years ago, she was walking up in amongst the oaks, and I'll just sing this little song that she was given from the oak trees. It goes like this: "Let the water rise up and fall down upon the earth here. Let the water rise up and fall down upon the earth here. Let the water rise up and fall down upon the earth here. Come rain, come rain, come rain, come rain." And then it just repeats from there, and I find myself sometimes when I'm driving, you know, it's got that sort of that rhythm of the windshield wipers going, and I imagine that the rain is just pouring down and my windshield wipers are going and I feel it. And of course it's good when you're starting these things to start when there's already sort of an inclination. You know, it helps to boost your confidence and let you see that you can do these things a little bit. And so, you know, when I hear that the clouds are rolling in or that things are kind of coming from the south, which is the direction that we need here in the Central Coast to have the rain come, it always comes from the south, I'll go ahead and start singing my song. And, you know, I'm so very pleased to say that within a day or two, there's the rain.
Mm. Yeah, we had rain yesterday, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Mm. And Frank, my darling husband, has a wonderful rain calling thing that he does, which is he gets up and cleans our skylight on top of the house. It's like washing the car or something. It's foolproof. Last time he did it, which was earlier this week, it rained within an hour. We knew the rain was starting to come, but it was looking like it was not really coming in with a lot of force, you know, and so I said, "Frank, let's get up and clean the skylight." And he did, and sure enough, it was raining in short order.
Good.
So, yeah, and then there are bigger examples, too, that people who have really worked with this have managed to do. For instance, Frank tells a story of this. Well, it's a news story. There was this village on the Big Island in Hawaii, and it wasn't that many years ago, where the lava was diverted around this little cluster of Hawaiian houses. These were the native people who were living there, and the elders had said that that would be the case, and the homes were indeed spared. So, you know, and like I explained last week, you know, for my own part, I've used my absolute sincerity and my intention to affect the world around me. And typically I'll do this using the power of prayer with humility and requests for the highest good for all. And, of course, just for whatever I'm asking for to be of no inconvenience to anyone. And using this formula, I've successfully and consistently opened a lovely, clear space for myself as I enter into traffic on the freeway on one of our very short and perilous on-ramps here in San Luis Obispo.
Oh, I know it well, Josie.
Yeah.
But just before you move on, we've had a lovely message from Chaz
Port
Orchard. Not sure where Port Orchard is. Do you know where that is?
Oh, yes, I think it's up in Oregon.
Up in Oregon, okay. And
hi, Chaz. Thanks for writing in.
And Chaz writes, "My African gray parrot loves your voice and song, Josephine, and so do I love Chaz."
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, please say hi to your African gray parrot for me. And, you know, Rupert Sheldrake, as I mentioned earlier, one of my very favorite scientists, he visited an African gray parrot in the New York area that was an extraordinary bird. I think this bird had something like 2,000 words in its vocabulary. It was 1,000-something. I don't remember, so don't quote me on it. But it was a very high number of words and could actually form sentences. It's extraordinary, the intelligence of these birds. And I was just speaking with a friend just the other day about the intelligence of crows and ravens and blue jays. And, you know, we so often underestimate these amazing creatures that share our lives with us. So hello to your darling gray.
On the subject of that, I read, I think it was yesterday, these scientists saying that they completely underestimated the intelligence of goats.
Oh.
And now they're having to radically rethink how intelligent goats are.
Yes, absolutely. And like I shared last week, my little story about Astrid who came to live
mm-hmm.
with us. And her mother, and how she calmed right down when she got to see the photograph of her mother's face on her little barn wall.
That was very nice.
So then I've also had another experience, and this one of, you know, being sensitive and being aware. Actually, I've had a good many of them, but these are just a couple of highlights that I'll share. And both of these took place while Frank and I were traveling. And in the first one, I had the knowing that we needed to change direction. To redirect our route of travel, I just said, you know, before we turn on this road, can we just, you know, take a minute and pull over? And, right, you know, he's used to living with a psychic. And so he's like, well, sure, yeah, what's up, you know? And I said, well, you know, I'm just thinking that we should go this other direction. I'm just thinking that we shouldn't go this way. And I don't really know why, but I feel like we should trust it. And so we did. And so there was two like this. And on that first occasion, when we arrived at our destination, we were sitting down and we checked into our hotel room and we were listening to the news, and we found out that we had just avoided a hurricane that had come on shore that day right at the place where we were about to arrive and would have arrived, and right about at the same time that we would have gotten there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Isn't that something? And then there was another instance, too, where similar story, you know, I was like, no, let's not go that way. And turned out there was an earthquake that had badly damaged the road. I don't think anybody had been injured, but it resulted in this tremendous gridlock on the highway, and we missed that, which was so great. So, you know, we can call the rain, and we can affect the weather, and we can call the fish to our boats, and we can find the animal that's willing to come to our family's next meal, to be our family's next meal. And, you know, this happens for people who are trackers, especially those trackers who see the silver cord, who have that psychic ability, the ability to see that silvery mist along the ground that leads them right to the animal or person that they're seeking.
Good Can you say a bit more about that, Josephine? I'm not really familiar with the silvery cord.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing. So I heard a talk not too long ago here in San Luis Obispo by a man named John Brown, and he wrote a wonderful book called What the Robin Knows. And again, he's listening to the subtle nuances of nature, and he was trained by a man that they call Grandfather. His name is escaping me right at the moment. And perhaps if one of our listeners knows it, they'll call it in for us. But he likes to pay attention to the bird life and what the birds are saying. So, you know, we're out hiking. We don't really notice these things. But there are the birds, and they're flying up, and they're screeching, and they're saying little warnings to each other. And if a coyote is running through the brush, they're doing similar things. They're saying, whoa, coyote coming, you know. And so they're all paying attention all the time. And so similarly, so does he. And he began to study with some of the aboriginals in South America. In Australia, I think it was. And he found that there were folks there who could, you know, just track an animal, and he'd try to keep up, and they've got this wonderful little jog walk that they're doing, and they're just, boom, off they go, and he's like, wow, okay, let me keep up with these guys. And there would be long distances where the tracks wouldn't be there, and these guys are still just going on, and then sure enough, the tracks would pick up again, and they'd see him again, and they'd go after him. And then he remembered a time from his youth when he had been out, and he was looking for something. I think it might have been a dog or something. Don't quote me on this because I'm not positive that I'm remembering the story correctly. But he was looking for somebody, and I think it was like one of his lost animals. And he just got a sense across the meadow of this silvery sort of vaporous line, and he followed it, and then he found what he was looking for. And then he since has found out that there are trackers in places like Africa who have really developed these skills, who can track people, like wanted persons, even on sidewalks. And you think, how can anybody ever see a track on concrete like that that's set and is so hard? Well, he says that the way that you do that is you are following that little silvery cord. And he since has heard about, so when he was following these aboriginal men, he asked them, so how are you doing this? And they kind of mentioned, well, there's the cord, you know, you follow the line. And then he did a documentary about it. I think that he was part of a documentary. I think it's a wonderful film. I think it's called The Animal Communicator. And it shows this woman who really has an advanced skill of being able to communicate with animals, receive messages from the men to give messages in a very silent and receptive way. So she can go out like amongst a wild troop of baboons and settle down on the rock and project kindliness and peace. And the baboons will come over and begin to accept her into their group and begin grooming her and that sort of thing. So there's a lot to be said of the reverence and the respect with which we approach nature, and that's one of the things that this film shows so beautifully. And then as well, in this film, they showed him, he wanted to give an example of tracking. And so he had a dream. He laid down and went to sleep and was asking for this to be able to be so that he could participate in the film in a good way. And he got an image in his dream of a gnu. And in the morning, before the dawn was up, he set out into the early, you know, early dawn, late night air, and followed this sense of knowing that he had as to where this animal was. And then the silver line came before him. And he knew he was on the right track. And then he would come to a place and he would see some footprints, or he might see a little shallow in the grass where the animal had laid down and take a little rest. And he describes how sometimes when he's tracking, he'll actually lie down in those little places and feel the energy of the animal that has been there and ask for visions and ask for his way to be shown to him. And then he got up and did some more walking, and sure enough, there he came upon the very gnu that he had seen in his dream. And so they were able to record that, the filmographers, for the movie that they made. Really beautiful, isn't
very
it?
Very nice. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for that. I found that very interesting.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, in order to do these things, we do need to be in harmony with spiritual principles, and we do need to come from a place of respect and reverence in order to do so. We really do need to see everything as sacred and enter into personal relationships with all aspects of nature, like he did with his canoe. And these are requirements that come, you know, that come with these skills. If we're going to get these skills, we need to really pay attention to this and allow ourselves to grow in that way. Because our psychic abilities are not the goal. They are the byproduct of the higher and deeper learning. They are the result of, not the cause of, our spiritual growth. And deep understanding of the nature of the divine that is in everything, that is the sacred that surrounds us everywhere, all the time.
Wow, Josephine, that's really something to consider, isn't it?
It is.
I'm sure I've come across that idea before, that, you know, from other spiritual teachers, that their, you know, psychic gifts are, you know, the byproduct of the spiritual work.
Yes.
And they're kind of like things to bring people in.
Yes, and they are also something to be a little careful of, because we don't want to get the ego involved in this. We don't want to do this from a, ooh, look what a good person I am, I can do this. You know, it's the result of our deeper learning. So I'm definitely a beginner here myself, but I do allow myself to play a little bit in this sandbox, as it were, just to kind of see, so that I can share that we have these abilities, so that we can understand that some of these skills are not totally lost to us. We can reclaim them. It is a part of our natural, standard human operating gear, and we can all do it. Like my friends who picked up the dowsing just thought, you know, I'm going to go there. I'm going to give that a try. But like they said, they really understood that it was the connection with the subconscious mind and with spirit and with everything all around them.
So Josephine, then, could you, I mean, this is so interesting, it's so important. Could you then give me some practical guidance for how then we unify the three aspects of our minds? I'm sure that our listeners would find this really invaluable.
Well, absolutely. And so I'll start with the kahunas. I love the work that I mentioned earlier about, you know, Serge Kahuli King. And most Americans have heard the phrase, the big kahuna. And kahunas are the spiritual leaders of many of the cultural traditions of Hawaii. And the kahunas of yesteryear were reputed to be able to sense the arrival of a warring tribe long before they showed up. And the kahunas had the ability to affect the weather, even adversely. Thus, they could scatter their enemies before they showed up in order to prevent attacks. And many young Hawaiian children who showed interest and aptitude in spiritual matters were given to the kahunas by their families as soon as they were off the breast. It's said that these children were raised without any doubt, which is such a significant thing. They were taught to absolutely trust themselves. And this is a really vital component of what we need to do when we're developing our own spirituality and our own psychic ability, and it was certainly a vital component of their training. And that's why I share this information, because trusting ourselves really increases our psychic ability. And I sometimes say that doubt is the great destroyer of psychic ability. So as you may remember from our first show this month, which was titled How Big is the Self, we spoke about how the kahunas distinguish between the three aspects of the self, the ku, which is the subconscious mind, the lono, which is the conscious mind, and the kane, which is the superconscious mind. So the ku, that subconscious mind, it follows directions, it operates the body, and is the source of all psychic perception. And as you may remember from our first show this past month, which was titled How Big is the Self, I was speaking about Serge Kahuli King, who wrote that wonderful book, Mastering Your Hidden Self, A Guide to the Huna Way, that I love so much. And he said that the kahunas distinguish between the three aspects of the self, the ku, the lono, and the kane. And the ku is the lower self, or the subconscious mind, and it follows directions. It operates the body, and it is the source of all psychic perception. The lono, or the conscious mind, is the middle self. It's our decision maker. And the kane is the superconscious, the kane is the superconscious mind, or the higher self. And this aspect of ourself is the source of divine inspiration, and that is eternally trustworthy. So it's felt that the kahunas believed that when all three of these aspects, or these parts of ourselves, are united in a single purpose, then we can accomplish miracles in our lives. And this has certainly been true in my life. I believe it holds true for all of us. Our dutiful subconscious minds try to protect us from fears that we may have developed years ago, No matter how inspired we may be from our higher selves, our subconscious minds will do whatever needs. And when we do this, we can more effectively follow our inspirations and thus freely accomplish our dreams and our desires. So that is, basically we want to have no doubt. We want to trust ourselves. And then maybe now, Tony, you can move to the next slide.
Certainly.
Which is, trust yourself, expect the best, and bless the present. And those are the three main precepts of the HUNA Code. And that we covered a little bit in our second show of this month, the one that was titled Awakening the Powerhouse, Loving the Dutiful Servant Within.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So that was a very nice, show that really went into a lot of detail about how we can help our subconscious minds to get on board with what our conscious mind is thinking about and what our superconscious mind has inspired us to do. And our trust really connects us. It's the starting point for the understanding of our interconnectedness. So with that, I'd like to move on now to some thoughts from a wonderful metaphysician, Dr. Kathy Collott. And I learned about her from Marie Folio. And she has a lovely show that you can access from YouTube. And in it, she had a guest, Dr. Kathy Collott, Collaut. And she gave us five steps that we can take to get our lives, to get our subconscious minds on board with our conscious goals, to manifest our fondest desires in life. And the first step, she said, is to identify the problem, to really see what is preventing you from succeeding with your goals. And she said it's important for us to be honest with ourselves and to ask within. And I always like to make a few notes when I'm doing this kind of research in myself. And then she says it's really important to stay humble because this subconscious mind of ours, you know, we know it's this huge powerhouse. It's got 97% of our brain function is in the subconscious mind. And so it's really got, it's the greatest, by far, the greatest processing powerhouse in our brain.
So Josephine, on that point then, would you say that a piece of good advice would be just to go with your own intuition about, you know, what the where the resistance is then?
Absolutely, yeah. So, like, for instance, let's say, you were concerned about something, we wanted to go ahead with an idea that you had, but there are some concerns. Like maybe you think if you went ahead with that idea, you might exhaust yourself or do too much. And so your subconscious mind is going to be protecting you from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what you want to do is to move to step two, which she says is to get really specific about what your subconscious mind is watching out for. Oh, and maybe you should go ahead and show that next slide that we have for Dr. Kathy Collott there, if you wouldn't mind, Tony.
Certainly.
Great. So the first one is to find resistance and to stay humble. And then step two is to get specific about what your subconscious mind is protecting you from.
And again, you would suggest the same sort of like strategy to look within.
Yes, to look within. So you can think, let's say we wanted to go ahead with a business venture or something in our lives. And we thought, well, I'd love to do that. But I'm afraid that if I try to do that on top of everything else that I'm doing, I might wind up getting stressed out or I might have too much to do or
mm-hmm.
too much on my plate. So then you
would
want
to,
yeah. Then you want to move to step three, which is to get specific about what your subconscious mind is protecting you from. Well, that's step two, get specific about what your subconscious mind is protecting you from. And then step three is make a promise to work things out. And so what we need to do is to promise our subconscious minds, to promise ourselves that we won't work against ourselves. So let's say that this is an idea of a business venture that you want to start into, and you're worried that you might get exhausted, and so the promise that you would make is, okay, and I love the way she puts it. She says, listen, friend, I hear you. She said, I really appreciate you looking out, and if this means greater strain or exhaustion, then I won't do it. And that's the trick. We need to really inform ourselves that we're not going to work against ourselves. We need to do it so that we have harmony in our lives, so that our whole self is on board with it. So that's step three, make a promise to work things out. And then she said step four is to douse your subconscious mind with positive examples of other people whose lives have improved as a result of manifesting their desires. So in our little case here, you might say, well, You know, there are different people who have done this similar sort of a business plan, and it's been very successful, and they've wound up having more time in their life. So you'd want to find actual specific examples and, you know, the positive ones that show that things really worked out and that that's what you're going to try to do and that's the only thing you're going to do. And if it doesn't work out that way, you'll stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way you're allowing your subconscious mind to do what its main job is, which is to protect us, to watch out for us. And so that's step four. And the point here is to let our subconscious mind know that it's possible to satisfy all sides of our heart and mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing with step four. Then she says, for step five, you want to solidify and affirm. And what she means with that is that you, the more completely you establish your new perspective in your subconscious mind, the more you can benefit from its immense powers and its vast resources. So in this case, you know, you might have affirmations like, I know that I'll be successful at this. I see that other people are successful at this. Or I have a great passionate desire for this, and I feel inspired, and I can trust that what I feel inspired about, I want to go for. So whatever it is that you can come up with that you can share with great passion and with as much emotion as possible, that's the way we want to go with these changes for our subconscious mind. And like I was mentioning in that show that we did, the second show of this month, Awakening the Powerhouse, Loving
mm-hmm.
the Dutiful Servant Within. In that show, I mentioned Lee Miltier, who's been speaking about the subconscious mind and reprogramming our subconscious mind for many years now. And she's a wonderful inspirational speaker. And what, you know, she gave us all sorts of examples of ways that we can begin to do this, that we can reprogram ourselves with subliminal suggestion or positive affirmations or flooding ourselves with positive emotions or any number of ways. So refer back to that show for more information on how you can really accomplish this step four, this step five of solidify and affirm. And I love this little program that she has. I've used it many times, and I find it to be most helpful for really helping me to redirect the inner feelings that I have that are, you know, fearful or hesitant, that would get in the way of me manifesting my desires in life and moving ahead with my full capacity. So that's the whole idea here, is we want to try to allow ourselves to move ahead with our full capacity in our life with all three parts of our minds, the conscious mind, the subconscious, and the superconscious mind, all unified towards the same goal.
So can I just ask a question about that then, Josephine? Because a lot of what you've said so far has been about, you know, the conscious mind and the subconscious mind.
Yes.
So how then do we integrate the superconscious mind?
Yes. So the superconscious mind is coming through in our inspiration. It's our joy. It's what we'd love to do. It's often our deepest, most passionate secret, what we can barely share with others because it seems so precious. It's what we, you know, dearly, dearly desire. And in a way, sometimes it's good not to share it with others because it's good to honor it as sacred, because it is coming from the sacred part of ourselves, the divine aspect of ourselves, that little slice of the pie of divinity that we all have. And so that is, you know, tied in with our joy and our purpose. And we all have our purpose that we've come here to do. You know, I think of that jigsaw puzzle analogy of life, you know, and maybe I'm the square that has a little bit of the corner of the barn and the blue sky and some leaves in it, you know, the little piece. And I have to do my part and fulfill my purpose for all the whole puzzle of life, everybody's piece, to all fit together into one coherent whole. So it's really important that we try to align ourselves with what we are inspired to do, to manifest our purpose in life, our greatest desires. And that's what this whole program is about, that Kathy Kalat gives us, is that if we can then make sure that there is nothing lingering, some old programming lingering in our subconscious minds, because as I've mentioned on previous shows this month, a lot of what is in our subconscious mind was programmed in there before we were the age of six. So there might be some things in there that don't really apply to us anymore, like, you know, maybe it was something about a belief system that our parents had that we don't really have ourselves anymore in our adult life. You know, some people have parents who've had beliefs about, danger or fear lurking around every corner or something. And maybe this person is now a mature person and they really don't believe that there is danger and fear lurking around every corner. But the subconscious mind, unless we re-educate it, it might still be holding on to that old belief. And so we want to work with it by giving it lots of positive examples. You know, see, look at everybody else is doing just fine. They're not finding any danger or fear around the corner, so we can move ahead with that too. You know, whatever it might be. So just taking that time to, you know, this is work that's really best done on our own and where we're just really looking within and being honest and sincere with ourselves. And like she says, staying humble about it. So we think about something that we'd love to do and then we find out what the resistance is, stay humble, get really specific about what the subconscious mind is protecting us from, and then make a promise to work it out so that we won't work against ourselves. And then douse ourselves with those positive examples of people whose lives have improved as a result of their manifesting their dreams. And then solidify and affirm. And that's the part where we can, you know, really immerse ourselves in the positive emotions of what we'd like to see happen in our life and the good examples of other people that have succeeded. And then all of those positive self-talk and subliminal or auto-suggestions or whatever tool it is that we are using. So then there is another person that I'd like to mention on our show tonight, and that is Bruce Lipton. Many of you have heard of Bruce Lipton. He wrote The Biology of Belief, and he studies the science of epigenetics. And epigenetics is, it explains, it's the biology. It's how an organism creates its biology. In other words, whether it turns on or off genes that it has received in its genetic DNA. And the reason why we turn on and off our genes is based on how we perceive our environment to be. And even more importantly, I think, how we believe our environment is. So, you know, we get back to the, is the glass half empty or is the glass half full? Do we believe that we have something that is rich and abundant in our lives, or are we supported by the universe, or that the universe is friendly, inherently friendly? Or do we believe that the world is against us and people are out to get us? And, you know, so those are the kinds of things. And then we turn on and off genes according to our beliefs, which is a really astounding revelation that has come out of science these days. So our genes are activated or deactivated depending on what our beliefs are. And this is one of the great examples that he gives, is that if there are children who have been adopted into a family, and let's say this family has a history of a genetically transferred disease, those adopted children have the same potential to contract that disease as the actual birth children do.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
That's extraordinary.
It is, because the beliefs of the family are that there is that disease there and that those children have had that programmed into their subconscious mind since they were young.
I've heard that that's one of the reasons that people are a bit dubious about all this scanning for diseases, because it can incline some people to believe that they have the thing and then they get ill very quickly after the diagnosis.
Yes, I love what Christian Northrup said when she was speaking to women about breast cancer scares, you know, and she said that every month women are feeling their breasts with terror in their minds and in their hearts, wondering if they're going to find a lump or something. And she said, you know, what she likes to do, and she took both hands and picked up her breasts and just said, girls, you're safe with me. Because we want to be very careful about where our minds are at, especially when it comes to our bodies.
Mm.
I thought that was a great description of exactly where we want to put our minds. So our subconscious mind is our original brain structure. It's in operation like 95% of the time, and it's very reactive. And it dwells only in the present moment, which is really kind of surprising information, because you'd think, well, this old information that was learned years ago, but the thing of it is it reads it as if it was learned right now. So then, and also, as we've been mentioning several times this month, the subconscious mind is primarily habitual, and these habits can be really complex, like walking or dancing or moving or speaking or breathing. And then, as well, we can go on autopilot with our subconscious mind, like we've been mentioning how, you know, you're driving a car and you can remember the conversation that you had while you were riding in the car, but you can't remember what happened on the road.
That's right, yes.
That sort of thing. So driving has become habitual. Same thing with washing our hair in the shower. Did I wash my hair already? You know, I was busy singing. I wasn't paying attention. So these kinds of things, these habitual patterns, those fall into the domain of the subconscious mind. And it's this invisible part of ourself that is running our lives most of the time. So most of what's in our subconscious mind was downloaded into our subconscious minds during the first 6 years of life, as I said. And at that time, we've got other people feeding us our habits and our lifestyles. So what Bruce is saying with this is that our lives are not a printout of our conscious desires. He said, instead, our lives reflect the contents of our subconscious minds, and our pre-programmed subconscious mind habit patterns are vastly more significant than all of our good conscious mind intentions. 95%.
So that's where you would say we really need to do the work.
That's right, because we want to get in there and find out where, you know, like Dr. Kathy Collott was saying, find out what the resistance is, find out what your subconscious mind is protecting you from, and then make those changes. And as you might remember from the earlier show this month where we were talking about the nature of the subconscious mind, I think it was the first one from this month, was awakening the powerhouse. It was how big is the self.
Mm-hmm.
And in that we spoke about how the subconscious mind is really holding this vast amount of information, and that's what we are using to run our lives. But it does reason logically, and it does obey orders, and its incentive is to grow. Its primary directive is to grow. So if we have old programming in our subconscious mind, it's happy to move on to the new programs.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're going to be beneficial. So if we say, look, you know, like for instance, let's say somebody has a fear that their spouse might die young or something, or younger than them, and they really don't want that to happen. So then they can start to say, look at all these older people who are happily together. You know, they did it. Why can't we do it? And wouldn't that be much nicer? Wouldn't you like that better? Yes, because, you know, as Peace Pilgrim says, my other dear mentor, you know, worry is a negative prayer. So we don't want to be focusing on those negative outcomes to our lives, which is so often what happens. Our subconscious mind, this great powerhouse, is saying, well, what about this fear? Well, what about that fear? Oh, well, we've got to watch out for this stuff, you know. And so long as we're running those fear programs, we are being very creative with them. And so we want to watch out. We want to pay attention to what our minds are thinking. And that's where the Buddhist practice of mindfulness comes in and is so helpful for us. So, and for the most part, you know, we are totally unaware of these subconscious mind behavior-creating thoughts and beliefs. So we want to bring our awareness to them. And then, you know, whatever we're struggling with in life is a part of our lives that our subconscious mind does not have appropriate programs for. So we want to reprogram our subconscious mind to something that is more appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another really interesting point that Bruce Lipton makes, and I really love this one. He says that when we fall in love, there's this sort of a honeymoon phase where we are thinking about everything that we say to that other person. We're dressing ourselves with meticulous care. We're really paying attention to how we're driving, what we're doing. We are fully present in the conscious mind. So we're taking that little meager 5% of our brain power, and we're really putting it on board, and we're using it. And then he says that, and that's mindfulness, right? And then he says that that honeymoon time of our lives when everything is going great is no coincidence. We create it. We can create the life that we love when we give it our full attention
mm-hmm.
and when we free ourselves from our old programming. So he says that what happens then is after the honeymoon phase is a little bit down the line and you're maybe busy working on your taxes and your new best girl comes up and says, gee, honey, how's it going? You know, and you say, oh, no, leave me alone, I'm busy. That might be the old programming kicking in because you're not fully conscious because you're busy working on, you've got your conscious mind working on the taxes. And so the subconscious mind goes on to autopilot and responds out of habit. And then she's thinking, well, what was that about? And so if we can come to some awareness about how sometimes it's just our old programming that's talking, we can be more forgiving of each other and we can go ahead and move ahead a little bit and learn how to reprogram ourselves.
That sounds very nice.
Yes, it is. And so then, of course, you know, some of the ways that we can reprogram ourselves, hypnosis has long been used for this. You know, you've learned about people who have quit smoking with hypnosis, that sort of thing. And that's just putting in a different program on a very deep level when we're in a meditative state. And there's other super learning modalities that can help us to affect change in our subconscious mind and reprogram our lives. Some of you have heard of EFT tapping, the emotional freedom technique.
I think you mentioned that before, yes.
Yeah, it's a wonderful technique, and they've used this a lot in recovery after the war in Kosovo for helping people to get over their post-traumatic stress syndrome disorder. And it's very effective for that. Then there's that, like I mentioned, also the subliminal or the auto-suggestions. And whatever it is that we do, if we really embrace it with, you know, our new beliefs with strong emotions, what we do then is we really flood ourselves with positive, you know, hormones. Actually, our hormones come flooding in that are really associated with those positive feelings, and they really bring about a change. And then another method that we can use is heart math. And I don't know if some of you have come across that book. I think it's Doc Children. And it's a wonderful source of how we can make changes. We think about something beautiful that we love and just let that flood ourselves with those positive emotions. And then as well, once we have gone about to do some reprogramming, we need to sort of fine-tune it. We need to, you know, reinstall these new programs into our subconscious minds regularly. And then this allows us to make that transition from the victim to the master. And then we can choose a different belief, a different story, and create a new life.
Well, Josephine, that's absolutely fantastic. I couldn't have wished for a fuller answer.
Oh, good.
But, well, this is the question I asked in part one. For anyone that's forgotten, that was what I wanted, some practical strategies for unifying the three parts of the self. But I'm looking at the clock, and I think that we really are very near the end now.
Okay. All right. Then, well, it's been very fun. I've really enjoyed myself. It's such a great topic, this one. It's so big, and it has such a profound effect.
Yeah, and it's huge, isn't it?
Yes, it really is.
I feel we could easily do a couple more shows just on this very topic, and so important, too.
Yeah, it really is.
Anyway, the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website. Simply go to stepintomagic.com and click on radio. And if you've enjoyed tonight's show, please tell your friends. And remember that you can listen to all of our shows anytime. You can now subscribe to the podcast and listen to all of the shows with the click of the mouse. Or you can visit the top menu, Radio Archives, and access the link for any show that you'd like to hear from Josephine's website. So, Josephine, before we close, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Well, yes, Tony, there are. And maybe you can show that last slide that we have. And this is a wonderful quote from Elizabeth Lindsay. I just love her wisdom. And just to kind of recap and move back to part one that we did, this one says, trust your ability to know your way in the darkness. And as the dawn rises, open your eyes slowly. You are surrounded by voyagers. Let them take the anxiety and self-doubt. Whenever we are willing to step into our greatness, the ancestors will meet us there. Isn't that a beautiful quote?
And that's really beautiful.
I love it. So I'd like to thank you all for the gift of your time, for taking the time to listen to our show. It means so much to me, and I'd love to share with you this little blessing. It goes like this. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. And I trust that everyone listening has learned something valuable about how to unify the three aspects of the self. This has been show number SM-4.14. And we look forward to having all of you join us again next month when we will be covering the topic of finding our true purpose in life.
And Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. And I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night. Thank you.